Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back from the break in such style. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Flemmer, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It is delicious, the spiciest, the boldest, the most amazing hot sauce out there on the market. And right now, our guest, Eric Bergstall of Empire Golf, is going to get a chance to win a bottle of JB's Best and a t-shirt that says, "I'm a hottie." Eric, I don't know what's better about the hot sauce, actually, that it tastes so good, because it does taste like a wing sauce. It's spicy and it's bold and it's got a lot of, you know, a lot of flavor to it. Or the fact that it's done by a golf writer, John Burwell, formerly of PGA.com for many years, just decided to take a flyer, and it's on every table in the Deep South. All of our guests that come on the show from Georgia and Carolina and Florida all rave about it. So I'm hoping you get a chance to win a bottle, because it really is good stuff. I'm one of those people that, as much as I can't stand the Patriots for what they did to my Steelers, I'm like Bob Kraft. You know, if I like a product, I'll go out and have it become a sponsor of the show, and I love his hot sauce. So, all right. Now, you also have ties to upstate New York, which bleeds into our question, because I am hosting the show today from the bucolic splendor of upstate New York. I'm at the Tramontane Cafe sipping a cup of cappuccino on my lunch break. And you also happen to have a place in upstate New York. You like to come out here, I don't know whether it's to ski or just enjoy being out in the great outdoors.
Yeah, the Adirondacks is God's country. It's beautiful, and been up there for 30 years, and it's a four-season environment. So I love it. My family loves it, and it's hard to beat it, actually. So
it is God's country. I remember we were talking when I was doing the interview for you that is up at thegolfnewsnet.com. We interviewed Eric about all the things we talked about in the first segment about Bayonne. We also mentioned how much I love to drive up to Saranac Lake and the various ski areas all in the upstate area. So the question has a little to do with that. Because I'm broadcasting from the Tramontane, I was chatting with the owners. I happened to look up that the word Tramontane means from across the mountain. And the owner told me, she said, "Well, we picked it for a different reason. It also means stranger in a strange land." Whereupon I was able to enlighten her that we get the phrase "stranger in a strange land" from one of the great works of literature. This Irish author's main character described himself by saying, "In London I would be a stranger in a strange land." Who is this famous character by this Irish writer?
Boy, that's a tough one.
Irish writer, which may be a little misleading, by the way, and his lead character who said, "In London, I would be a stranger in a strange land."
I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry.
Oh. Well, we were looking for Count Dracula, actually.
Okay.
So,
okay.
The part of the confusing thing about that question, let me guess, you were going to say you didn't know that Bram Stoker was Irish.
I had no clue he was Irish.
I had no clue he was Irish. Okay. Although, I will say, if we had a good laugh, I had Tom Doak and Rand Morissette on the show about a month ago. And the trivia question they got was kind of related to this. I asked them what nationality Bram Stoker was. And it was Doak who got the closest. He guessed that he was from Scotland. I would have missed it. I would have thought he would have been British. And Rand Morissette guessed something like Slovenian or Slovakian or Transylvanian or whatever. But
right,
it is a tough question. But that's okay. Next time you come on the show, we'll have another chance to see if we can get you a bottle of hot sauce and a t-shirt. And very quickly, the one last bit of business that we have to do, I'm also responsible for the football picks for GNN. And so we went 1-1 last week. We were correct that the Patriots were going to trounce the Steelers. Good Lord, what a terrible performance. But we did not get the Falcons. Okay, I got in my teaser. I had the Packers getting 10.5 points, and they got trounced by 20-plus. But we're going to come back. This is the official Super Bowl pick for Golf News Network and the Jays Play Show. We are taking the Patriots plus 3 points and the over, 52.5. And the way it works, Eric, is if you do both, it's called a teaser, you get to move the line 6 points. So what do you think? The Patriots are 3-point favorites. What's your pick? I mean, it's early right now, but what do you think, Patriots or Falcons?
Yeah, I think my money's on the Patriots. I'm a Tom Brady fan. I think he came into this very motivated to early in the season to prove a point this year, and I think he wants to go all the way. So you can't the suspension, I think, kind of got him fired up. So I've known Tom. He's a big golfer. He loves golf. He's been up to Bayonne. I knew him. I've actually met him before he was a big star. So I'm a fan, and I'm going to pick New England and the points.
Now I have to ask the question, and thank you for leading into something I wanted to explore. We can definitely talk about the great architecture at Bayonne and what a triumph it was in trying to get it built, but let's trade some stories about a couple of celebrities. I want to hear all about the day Tom Brady showed up to play, and then I'll tell you the great laugh I had with Natalie Gullis.
Okay. Well, I wasn't there with Tom when he came, but he was there with a friend, or he came through a friend of mine, Paul Spengler. Paul was Paul had been in charge of Pebble Beach for decades, and Tom is Tom is a player that bounces around all over the place, and Bayonne was one that Paul Spengler introduced him to. So Tom loved it, and again, we've been fortunate to have many high profile people all want to come and play and experience it. So it is a very unique, special place. So
I had a good laugh there. It was several years ago. It was in between when Natalie Gulbis was dating Ben Roethlisberger and the man that she's married to now. You guys didn't even have the clubhouse in it. She just had a big tent. And I was wearing my, some people who know me, that if I don't wear all black, which I usually wear, I will sub in blue. It makes life easy to only have two colors. And so I was wearing my blue pullover with the black stripes and my black pants with the blue pinstripe, the Adidas outfit. And she came in wearing her white outfit with the blue stripes on the top and the blue outfit with the white stripes on the bottom. Now, I don't golf very well. I'm a writer. I should have been able to pick out that it was Natalie, but I didn't. I just thought it was a pretty girl coming in to play golf. And so the two of us just start chatting about anything that we love, your outfit, what you think of the golf course, which, by the way, she absolutely loved it. She couldn't wait to play again. She had played with Donald Trump, actually. And so we're just chatting like old friends. And, my friend Eddie Peck, who owns Black Mesa, comes up to me and says, "Oh, I see you've met Natalie Gulbis." I said, "What? Come on." He goes, "Jay, that's Natalie Gulbis." And I actually looked at him and I said, "Oh, come on, you're pulling my leg." And he grabs my head and he turns it towards her bag. And I see her bag over in the distance. It says Natalie Gulbis. And I totally saved the day by turning to her and saying, "Well, how about that? Natalie, you're much prettier in person." The whole room erupts in laughter. So I still kick myself for not asking her to play a couple of holes with us. So, but I'm sure I'll get the opportunity sometime soon. I missed her when she came to Forsgate, my home, but, there'll be another chance. But while we have the opportunity, Bayonne is a triumph because it took 7 years to build, 7 million cubic yards of earth, and God knows how many permits and regulations and environmental restrictions. Tell everyone how an old landfill in New Jersey across New York Harbor became one of the great masterpieces of American golf.
Wow. Okay, that's obviously a long story, complicated, but the premise and the origin was that it wasn't going to be a golf course. It started as a full depository because the New York Harbor is such an industrial port and provides goods and services from all over the world through the harbor. And the harbor needs to be dredged and deepened. Now, part of the global flow of goods is through the Panama Canal. Panama Canal construction began and conceived many, probably 20 years ago, to expand it and enlarge it for larger vessels. So if people out there, if you see the container ships that are coming through ports today, very few can handle the large ships. And on the East Coast of the United States, you can come directly from, let's say, China, which is a major exporter, to the West Coast, but you need to go through the Panama Canal to get to the East Coast. And so the harbor had to be dredged and deepened to 50 feet. It was 35 feet. And because it's the New York Harbor, federal regulations prohibited the dumping of this material out into the ocean. And so sites had to be found, located. The material had to be processed with Portland cement to bind it and tie it together. And that was the genesis of this project and the site. So it was originally going to be filled. There was an economic model to take the material in. I came in after and said, here we go. Let's turn it into a golf course. And instead of creating something like a 50-foot flat area, let's get it to, grades from 10 feet above sea level, which is the edge of the property, to just about 100 feet at its highest point. So that's how it got started. That's how it was, conceived. And then through the process, many regulatory constraints and guidelines we had to go through, permitting that included walkways, the pier area where all the material came in, slopes and regulatory slopes that we were able to modify to be able to get there. So there could have been, 30 things that could have killed this project, and we fought the battle, and we were successful in getting it done. It really shouldn't be there. I mean, that's just the truth. There should not be a golf course on that property, and it was just a lot of perseverance that allowed it to become such a special, very unique place.
Well, you just reminded me of a great quote from the Revolutionary War. Okay, I'm an old colonial history major. They said of Fort Ticonderoga that it was unassailable because the only mountaintop that overlooked it was unclimbable. But a famous British general said, where a billy goat can go, a man can go, and where a man can go, he can drag a gun. And he got a couple of cannons on top of that mountain somehow. And boom, the British took Ticonderoga in the Revolutionary War during John Burgoyne's campaign. So what I say to you is exactly what you did. Now, wait a minute, if a man can go there, he can build a golf course there, and hopefully a pretty good one. And with the 7 million cubic yards of earth, now, when we were doing our interview for Golf News Net, I thought you were going to tell me a story of about how you put in 7 million cubic yards and shaped it like natural erosion, then designed the golf holes, and instead was a completely different story that you came in with 1 million cubic yards each year, and you had to come through the bottleneck in New Jersey to get to this area or drop off the material by the harbor. So tell us about how you had to build this course piece by piece and by bit.
Yeah, I think there were two ways the golf course was built. Road trucks. There were hundreds of trucks every day bringing material in, and that material was not necessarily dredge material. So we had a road mechanism of bringing material in, and we had the dredge coming in by barge. So we built a pug mill, which was a 2-acre off floating area where these 300-foot-long barges would come in. The barges would have about 5,000 yards of material. We had excavators that would remove the dredge, which would be scooped out, and it was like a soup material. We'd put it in the bins of the pug mill. A pug mill is essentially a mixer, and Portland was mixed into this soup material. And what would happen is we'd constantly be building roads because this material you couldn't drive on, so you couldn't really just dump it. You'd have to bring it to an area, dump it, let it sit. In the summertime, it would take 3 days to be able to put a machine on it. In the wintertime, it would take 2 weeks for it to set up. You couldn't touch it for 2 weeks. And then it would dry up, and then you could actually do things with it, shape it. But the entire property had to be engineered to be what I'd call an upside-down bathtub. 10^-5 is the requirement that basically it becomes impervious. No water can penetrate the property. And so because it was a mitigation area, we had to clean it up. It was $30 million was spent just to clean up the site before anything came on. The property was lined with sheet pile to hold the weight of the amount of material that was imported. 7 million yards is very heavy. And it pushes the property out. There was a bentonite wall, a slurry wall, which kept any water from the outside coming in and any water on the property under the ground coming out. And we built pump systems which operate today. We pump pump groundwater out, treat the groundwater, and a site that had some contamination is now producing no contamination, is being cleaned up. A lot of these old properties, industrial areas on the New Jersey coast have that problem. And so this was one that was converted into a golf facility that now employs many, many people, puts no kids in, nobody goes to school, we pay a lot of taxes, and we built a mile and a half of a walkway that runs around portion of the perimeter that people can go utilize. People can go fishing, kayaking, and enjoy the river. So a great environmental win for New Jersey and the community, and for golfers, something where now you're in the New York Harbor, looking at New York City, looking at the Statue of Liberty, across from Brooklyn and Staten Island, and so a pretty special thing.
An astounding bit of construction getting it done, without question. It's our generation's Sawgrass. You know, Pete Dye had to dredge Sawgrass out of the swamp back in 1980, you know, and now, you know, almost 25 years later, we have another course that, you know, people said would have been impossible to build, and there's nothing there. And yet, it's also an artistic masterpiece. It is an Irish/Scottish lynx with many features that you would find at places like Lahinch or Royal Dornoch. So take a moment to tell our listeners who some of your favorite golf course architects are and some of your favorite places where you've played, and how those architects' design strategies and those courses influenced you at Bayonne.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think Bayonne a little different. The difficulty at Bayonne was we basically built the property. We built the golf course 5 times. I mean, we imported the material to create the big slopes. Then we had to put in 18 miles of drainage pipe and 4,000 catch basins. When you go put all that material in, you rip the whole place up. So you're really building it again after you do that. Then all this material that is impervious, you have to put material in to cover it. And to cover it up, you need 2 feet of a clean material, which from a grassing point, the pH of every load of clean is different. So So that was really what we shaped the golf course with, to create the details of it. Irrigation comes in after. And then again, we put in 12 inches of greens mix, sand, and covered and plated all the play areas. So fairways, tees, and greens, all the play areas and primary roughs were all built like the greens. So it was five major construction components of this, almost different than anything else. The old courses in Ireland and Scotland were done, with the almost nothing. Nature created it; it was there. Some great golf courses that you would find over there, like a Kings Barnes. You know, talk about off track guys. A guy like Mark Parson, and he developed Kings Barnes and Castle Stewart. If you go play those in Scotland, you'll see the effort that was made to look at how nature and the wind really affected the dunes. So if you ever play Kings Barnes, he took the dunes and overlapped them inward so that they fall over and the grass and the dunes look like nature pushed those things in. He did a marvelous job, and the same thing at Castle Stewart. That type of new construction and having things so interesting and well done, and Mark Parson had other designers, professionals, but he really did it himself. So here's a guy that I respect, did a great job, and is not a famous guy. I mean, he did it, he loved it, he had passion for it, and that's why he did it. I mean, I come out of the same mold, okay? I love it. I have a passion. As far, you know, I mean, bang on, look, I got to tell you, if I went to hire somebody, nobody would do this because they wouldn't spend 10 years building a golf course. You couldn't hire an architect today to go sit and put 10 years of their life into it. You either got to love it. So in my experience, I'm a developer. I do a lot of things, but it became my passion, my artwork, my release for, whatever's inside me that is my artistic side. So it's painting with a bulldozer, as I describe it. So instead of a paintbrush, I use a bulldozer. And I was fortunate enough to do that. I was fortunate enough to have a property like that to go do that. So, I love works of Corr and Crenshaw. I think Doak does a wonderful job. I mean, we're talking about, new guys, and I love the Fazio group and Tom. So, just as a person and what he does, he makes golf courses play fair but look difficult, and I enjoy that, and I enjoy playing his courses. So, there's dozens and dozens of great designers and people I know, I would say that's kind of guys that I respect and would just call out as far as what had
fantastic like to hit. Well, it was fantastic to have you on the show, everybody. One of the great movers and shakers in golf. If you get a chance to play one of the Empire Golf Designs, go and do it. And if you ever get invited to Bayonne, thank that person very, very much. Eric, thanks for coming on to the show. Everybody, we're going to be back with sections 3 and 4 of the Jay's Plays show. I am Jay Flema, and you are listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network. We're at the end of another great Jay's Plays show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as the theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.